Hi everyone, I'm Greg Lowe from Down Under in Australia. Fabric Down Under is a production from SQL Down Under. It covers Microsoft Fabric, a trademark of Microsoft Corporation. Opinions and views expressed in the podcast are individual and don't necessarily reflect the opinions and views of SQL Down Under or of Microsoft Corporation. Introducing Show 10 with guest Minnie Walia. Minnie's a principal program manager with the Microsoft Fabric Customer Advisory Team, or the CAP team, specializing in real-time intelligence capabilities within the product. She has over 20 years in tech, has extensive experience in developing applications and data platforms. Minnie spent more than a decade as an enterprise architect before transitioning into data analytics and engineering roles at Microsoft. So welcome, Minnie.
Thank you so much, Craig, for having me.
This is awesome. The thing I love is you're a local too. So I had a session with Devang a little while ago. We started talking about real-time analytics in Fabric, but I thought I'd get you along because you seem to be focused in that area. And so tell us how you come to be involved in this.
Yeah, awesome. Good to know that you already spoke with Devang, so you have some background. As you mentioned, almost 20 plus years in the tech, played different roles. And over a couple of years, I realized that my passion is more towards the data platforms. Mm-hmm. And within the data platforms, you would have seen the Lambda architectures, and the hot path seemed even more exciting to me.
Yeah.
That's how I landed into the real-time intelligence space. Mm-hmm. I did work as a Azure Data Explorer PM a while ago. And now seeing the integration with the broader Fabric ecosystem is even more exciting and,
Yeah, that's actually, I hadn't realized you'd come from the Data Explorer side of things, so which is incredibly helpful in this area.
Absolutely. But I keep telling people that real-time intelligence is not equal to Data Explorer. Mm-hmm. Data Explorer is just part of it. It's much bigger offering.
Yeah. And look, it's the thing that interests me with the real-time intelligence is that I see so many people starting to play around with Fabric and getting involved, but I don't see that many getting into real-time intelligence yet, although I think it's one of those areas that just offers amazing opportunities.
Yes, so we are seeing a lot of uptake in Europe, US, mm-hmm. and in Asia, I would say, yes, it's not as fast as we wanted it to be. It's mm-hmm. picking up, but people are still upskilling, trying to learn. And a lot of customers in this region I'm seeing are not at that level yet. So they generally still follow the traditional approach of using, they're okay with getting insights from their data on a mm-hmm. daily basis rather than in near real time.
Yeah.
So we are educating customers that you can make data-driven decisions. For example, I'm working with some of the retailers where I tell them that rather than bearing big losses by not having products on the shelves, you can get insights in near real time what's going to go out of stock and fill in those items, right? So those are the scenarios. They are possible. We are showing out of the possible to the customers, and hopefully we'll get there slowly.
Yeah, it's interesting because it moves across into helping people make better decisions going forward. It's one of the criticisms of our industry. I know people coming from the accounting side. I used to have a boss said, accountants make very good historians, and they'll tell you after you went wrong why you went wrong, and you go, yeah, okay, that might be a bit harsh, but not focused most of the time on things as they're occurring and sort of pushing those bits of information that could sort of make that difference. It's an area that it's interesting. I used to build systems for food wholesalers, for example, and it's interesting when people started looking to get systems, they'd always talk to their accountant, and the accountant would always think things like the general ledger was the most important thing for the business. And yet it was, you know, for someone who's running a business, that's almost like the least important thing. It's about buying and selling stuff, you know, is what really matters.
Exactly. And then on top of that, these days we are seeing cybercrime is growing. So mm-hmm. finding those fraudulent kind of malicious activities in real time is another thing which is picking up.
So what are you mostly seeing it used for so far?
See, real-time intelligence is purpose-built for telemetry analytics. And when mm-hmm. I say telemetry, it could be any kind of events coming from IoT devices, from line of business applications, sensors, from the connected vehicles or equipments within factories. It could be even the logs, the change data from the operational databases. So any kind of events, logs, and telemetry generated by different applications and sources in this digitized world, it can help to do analytics on top of it in near real time. So there are a lot of native features, the way it stores and processes data, the real-time analytics database within. So you can ingest from Kafka clusters, Event House, operational databases, and all of that data you can ingest in streaming mode.
Yep.
And you can enrich those streams with the reference data or contextualization data.
You often need to do that. So, yeah, I have some code coming in an event and I need to turn that into some business code or something like that. Yeah.
Exactly. And then the second key component is the real-time analytics database, which is called as Event House. And on Azure, it's called as Azure Data Explorer. All of them, they are using Gusto Engine underneath that processes the data really fast. It was purpose-built for time series analytics because it can partition the data automatically based on the timestamp. It automatically indexes all the data, all the columns that are stored into the database. So because it's a columnar store, so it can you can have a compression rate at a very high level, and that's why you get that speed. And that's the reason you can process data starting from few gigabytes to exabyte scale. That's where it is processing and running at the moment.
Yeah, it's one of the things that has always impressed me with the KQL-style databases is just how fast they are at querying very large numbers of rows. And so.
Yes, exactly. So the speed comes from a lot of native features. As I mentioned, the way it stores data, the way we process data, the distributed architecture underlying Event House. And the other cool part is taking not only ingesting and processing data, you can do the visualizations in real time using real-time dashboards or Power BI, or you can even build your custom applications on top of it using the RESTful APIs you can integrate with. And
these are also the replacement for where people had streaming data sets and things in Power BI, where that's sort of disappearing now, but this lets you do it much, much better again. So,
exactly. Yes. So real-time dashboards is what we are recommending for those scenarios. But the Power BI Direct Query connector also works really well for those scenarios. But again, it depends on what latency you are looking for. Then you can use
And so this is Direct Query, not Direct Lake. right? So it's
yes.
So it's actually running a KQL query against the data. Yeah.
Yes, it's one of the optimized and very efficient connector we have from Event House to Power BI.
Yeah. So listen, one of the things that I see in nearly all the examples, there are lots and lots and lots of examples where they're taking change data capture and things like that out of databases to do this. But I'm endlessly feeling like the real power of this is where data is coming from machines and things that, that have extremely high data rates, not just the sort of changes that are occurring in some other system.
Right, absolutely. So the real power comes in for the end users when, because if you look at the end users or business users, right, they don't care about how the data was processed behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. What they care about is the end result. So with real-time intelligence, you can ingest data at high velocity and high volume, as well as you can take actions on that in real time. So for example, as I mentioned, when you are getting data for the manufacturing space, you can figure out, you can set the thresholds if the, let's say, the temperature of certain devices are going beyond a certain threshold, you can raise alerts and notifications and you can take actions in real time. It has got native integration with Power Automate, for example, that can help you to trigger third-party workflows, create ServiceNow ticket, or you can just send emails to the admins who can take further actions on it. So that's where the power comes in. You are not only ingesting and creating beautiful dashboards, you are also taking actions in real time. Mm-hmm.
One of the challenges I see with this is, so where we're setting up event sources or sources of events, basically, so there's a fairly rich set of things that we can connect to, but I think one of the challenges I see in manufacturing sites that I work with is that generally that data has to come from PLCs or programmable logic controllers, things like that. And unfortunately, that industry is not brilliantly consistent in terms of like how do you talk to all those controllers and things like that. So do you see most of the time there'll be some sort of middleman, you know, type application or something that is talking to the PLCs and pushing the data maybe into an event grid or something where you can then pick it up?
Absolutely, yeah. So as you rightly mentioned, all these OT systems, they are very secure and they work with all the PLCs and legacy devices. So extracting data out of those systems, we have solutions in that space. Mainly partners have built solutions that are that can extract data from those legacy systems in a very efficient manner and then route that to the event stream. So, for example, I'm working with a lot of mining customers who are using partner solutions. I can share one, Fusion Data. You can go and check online. They have built a beautiful connector that can extract data out of these secure OT systems and can route it to Azure or to the Fabric event stream, and then you can build your end-to-end event-driven architecture using real-time intelligence.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges that I find all the time in the manufacturing systems I deal with is that generally the customers have bought pieces of equipment for the function that they provide in terms of the manufacturing side, but not in terms of how do you get data out of the device. And so the customers are getting better at this. So they're realizing they want to do analytics and things like that. But it's surprising the number of like quotations or you know, things that they'll ask people for, but they don't think of the data till later. And it's one of the things I find that's often quite difficult, because what you'll have in different parts of a company is I'll have the data and IT people, but then you'll have the people who deal with, I don't know, a SOAR or a something, and they're more interested, of course, in the SOAR, but it's important to get them to start thinking in terms of, you know, that thing can give out a whole lot of data, and it's really, really important as part of the purchasing decision to start thinking about how do I get that data out of that SOAR.
Exactly. And, you know, replacing those legacy devices or systems, even with the smart building solutions, I'm seeing there is a lot of change happening. Replacing those old systems with the new, better devices and sensors, it's a project in itself, but definitely you got to have, like we say, right, we are living in the era of AI, and you can't have good ML models if your data platform, your foundation is not right. Same way with these factories or smart buildings, manufacturing space, you got to have the right set of devices that can connect properly and easily with the cloud ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find a lot of them that have been around for a while tend to have never really thought about this much, and they consider a good data extraction something like you can periodically pull out a CSV or something like that, and they think that's great data integration. You go, no.
Yes, a lot of customers are still doing that. I do talk to a lot of manufacturing customers, those who are relying on the painful file-based integrations.
It'll be interesting to see with the real-time intelligence how much of the incoming data is coming from things like files and that sort of area, simply because of how the equipment tends to work nowadays.
Yeah. Most of the customers we are working with have found or built some sort of middle layer that can help to translate or convert all these, the data coming from these legacy devices to cloud. So they can push data out, and then we help them build that near real-time analytics dashboards and reports on top of it.
Yeah, the other thing I find is that the people who write the code in a lot of the machines and things don't have a real focus on data quality either. And so that ends up being a significant hassle. You know, like there's a series of machines that I was working on that are across six different sites. But for example, at one site, they only give you three digits of the year, not four. And so on. So like every time you get data, you're sort of thinking, what do I have to do to massage that into the right shape before I can actually make use of it? And for some reason, getting them to fix things like that just seems to be very difficult.
Absolutely. I think having good data quality, as I said, having it's as good as having the good foundation, right? So crap in, crap out kind of a...
Yeah, 100%. that is how it is. And so, look, what do you think is the best way for people to get started with RTI?
Yeah, so for the beginners, I would suggest we have got a lot of hands-on labs and tutorials that are out there. Start with those. We do conduct hands-on workshops, which are open for anyone to attend. So keep an eye on those. We send those announcements on LinkedIn, so anyone can join and get that hands-on experience. But the RTI tutorial, which is there in our documentation, is a good starting point.
Yeah. And I remember, actually, I did those many months back. even then, I thought they were fairly, you know, detailed and complete and stuff like that to get you going. I suspect the As I said, I think the real challenges will be more about the sourcing of the data rather than, you know, once you get it into the RTI tooling. So.
Yeah, I think both areas are important. Sourcing of the data problem you have to deal with on a case-by-case basis. But playing with RTI, we have got the sample data sets available for each of the components, be it event stream or event house or activator. So you can go and select sample data set to play around and learn more. So same is the case with the RTI tutorial we have. So the sample data set is streaming in and you can see how you can get insights on top of that streaming data set.
Actually, you raised Activator, and that's something we haven't... Hi, this is Greg coming to you from another time and place. If you have a data-related project that needs to get off to a great start with the right architecture, or if you have an existing project that's off the rails, why not contact us? We help organizations of all sizes, from startups to tier one financials, and we can help you too. Check us out at sqldownunder.com. Talked about there, so maybe might get you just to spell out a little bit about Activator and its role.
Yeah, Activator is one of the core components within RTI that gives you the ability to build alerts and notifications. So it's a no-code, low-code way of configuring rules on what basis you would want to send an alert. So as I mentioned, when certain thresholds go beyond limits, you can shoot off alerts in form of email messages, Teams messages, or you can trigger any third-party workflows.
A lot of customers. So you could fire something else up to run to deal with whatever the issue is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, one of the ones that interests me most, actually, that doesn't tend to get a lot of airplay, but often the events that are missing are just as important as events that are present, right? And so trying to make sense of taking actions or doing things when things are missing can be just as important as firing something when an event occurs.
Absolutely. So you can, for example, write your queries to find out when the events are missing for certain duration. Let's say for last 1 hour you did not receive any data, then you can raise that as an alert. So you can figure out that there's something wrong with the devices.
Or it could even be there's multiple channels and one's broken for some reason or something like that. But the lack of the data is telling you a lot. So listen, the other question that comes up, when I've had KQL databases in the past, one of the bits of pushback I tend to get from customers at times has been around the storage costs. And I'm just, and again, because, you know, these things can generate enormous numbers of rows. Is there any sort of guidance on how to manage those sort of costs?
KQL database, how you can manage is the data that you frequently query, you can set that data as your hot cache storage. Right. So, for example, if you frequently query last 7 days of data, you can set your caching policy for last 7 days and rest of the data will be stored in a cold store. That's one way to save cost, right? So set your caching policy and data retention policy based on the use cases. Typically, when customers just start using it, they don't tweak any of these policies, that incurs a lot of cost because by default, all of your data will be stored on hot storage, which is basically a premium storage, right? So those are the ways you can optimize the storage cost.
Yeah, it's interesting that people often start pulling these things in but haven't really gone and looked at what the option, like I know even in, say, Log Analytics and Azure Monitor, you know, there are options to limit the amount of data, to set retention, to do all those things. But I often find people who are complaining about the cost of it haven't looked at those things, you know, in some detail. Listen, one of the architectural things I've been sort of wondering about, though, more is whether you would expect people will keep all the rows in the KQL storage or whether they'll periodically roll those up into a lakehouse or a database or something like that where they'll do the more strategic analytics.
You can store data in Event House even for longer term.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends on the use case and the scenarios for which you are using specific engine, right? So for example, by default, the data retention policy is 100 years for KQL database. And you can very well change that depending on your requirements. I would say the scenarios where you need batch operations, you are doing a lot of year-on-year comparisons with heavy joins, all the traditional data warehousing sort of queries, you should use Fabric Data Warehouse or Lakehouse.
But
whenever you're doing any time series analytics scenarios where you need to do summarizations or aggregations based on timestamps or device ID, those are the kind of scenarios where you should be considering.
Yeah, I'm thinking because if you like roll things up and push them into a lakehouse, then you also have options for things like time travel and, you know, those sort of options become available in that sort of environment as well.
Yes. So it all depends, right? Which engine you are using.
Mm-hmm.
All of these engines provide a lot of flexibility and features in terms of the way you retain data and the way you process data, right?
Yeah.
Now, it's all about the, as I mentioned, it's all about the use cases, how you are going to make the best of all the different engines within the Fabric broader ecosystem.
What relationship do you think this has or to Azure Stream Analytics and or where that might go? Any thoughts?
Yeah, so Azure Stream Analytics is event processing engine, and even we use that today. It is behind the scenes, it is being leveraged by Event Stream. So when you ingest data into Event Stream, any kind of transformations you are doing within Event Stream using the user interface, we use Stream Analytics behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's interested me over the years because if I look at the progression from Stream Insight to Stream Analytics across to these sort of things, I think the main thing for me is it's becoming more productized, and which is a lot easier for people to get started with, you know, and to get things working than what it was in years gone by, you know. And I mean, I look at Stream Insight that they did in 2008 and it was kind of neat what was in there, but I always thought it was sort of talking to the wrong people because they were talking to the data people, but it was more just like a .NET library that somebody could use to build things, you know. And so I always thought it had the wrong audience there. But Stream Analytics got a lot further to just turning that into a product. And I think the nice thing about the real-time intelligence is it just takes that journey further again where it's a more complete just product for people to use.
Yeah, so if you look at it, real-time intelligence is a combination of all the messaging, streaming, and analytics services that had been running on Azure for more than a decade or so, right? So why we are encapsulating and building this no-code, low-code solution, we are trying to hide away the complexity from the customers. So you don't need to do the heavy plumbing of integrating different ETL tools, different streaming tools, and worry about how to connect all these Lego pieces together, right? So we are hiding that and giving you a low-code, no-code, seamless SaaS solution. And you just go and use Event Stream. And behind the scenes, it is going to use Event Hub, Azure Stream Analytics, and whatnot. So you don't need to worry about that integration part.
Yeah, I still think there's going to be a group of people who have to do the how do I get things, you know, from that sensor or whatever into an Event Hub or things. And I was just thinking about the additional, if somebody's is going to be sort of like expert in these areas, the additional technologies that they might want to start to have a look at. And I would have thought, yeah, things like Event Grid, AQMP, those protocols and things, or Kafka, another one, you know, the sort of, are there any others that you think would just be really, really useful for people to have their heads around at all?
Yeah, Kafka is very commonly used in all the large enterprises, and we have got native integration with different flavors of Kafka, right? It open source, Confluent, or the offerings that different clouds provide. The other one in the industrial space is OPC UA, which is commonly used. That could be another one which people can learn and build in their skill set.
I was thinking just for the ones that want to extend their knowledge a bit beyond just the central core of this. That's really good. Hey, listen, the only other thing that we didn't really mention is the real-time hub and what its role is.
Yeah, so real-time hub gives you the unified repository of all your streaming assets. So you can see what all streams, tables, different sources you have. From the real-time hub, you can start building your, it can be a starting point for you, wherein you can see what you already have. And then from there, you can build your event stream connection pipeline to start off. So that gives you that.
That's okay. Good. So listen, that brings us pretty much up to time. Is there anywhere people will see you or hear from you or other things coming up of interest, Mimi?
Yeah, so we are going to have a lot of exciting announcements at FabCon Vegas. To be honest, I'm not sure at this stage whether I'll be able to travel or not. Most likely I will be. So if anyone is going.
I must admit, if I had time to do that at the moment, FabCon in Vegas would be a really, really interesting event to have been at.
Yes. And even if you're not able to travel and meet people in person, everything will be recorded and shared online. Feel free to watch all the exciting announcements that are coming up. A lot more is happening in the AI space as well. And I forgot to mention that we have got the Copilot integration, which helps you to, for all the beginners who want to get started on RTI, Copilot gives you the ability to transform your natural language prompts into KQL queries, or you can even build real-time dashboards using Copilot. And we are hearing a common complaint that Copilot is available only for F64 capacity and onwards. Hopefully, this will change in future.
Yeah, it'd be nice to think so. It was one of the, there were a number of things that were F64 and up only. And yeah, that was quite a bit of pushback from people about that. So, because again, the thing I look at with that is it's a bit not very cloudy when you have very different things working at different SKUs or capacity levels. Because I always like to be able to sort of slide things up and down and still have the same things work.
Yes, and we do take customers and field partners, everyone's feedback very seriously. So whenever you try something, please do share your feedbacks. And if you have any ideas, I hope you know there's a separate link where you can post new ideas, some new features you would like to see in Fabric. So there's a big Fabric community. Within that, we have got real-time intelligence section as well. So
Do you see that as going to be going forward as the same audience or a different audience?
I am seeing every day growth in the real-time intelligence adoption area where more and more people are getting interested, because earlier people used to feel that it's not possible to build something which can run at that fast speed. And more people are realizing the possibility of getting data into their hands within seconds and minutes rather than hours or days. They are getting onboarded. So
fabulous. So listen, thank you so very much for your time today, Minnie.
Pleasure. Thank you so much. Really enjoyed the chat with you, Greg.